Hi, this is Jean-Jacques Taylor, and you're listening to Jot Talk. This is a podcast where I talk about the Cowboys, the team I've covered as a beat writer, columnist, TV insider, and radio host for 28 years. I'll also talk about the NFL and the things I love, working out, streaming, food, and all things Dallas. My boy Big Joe and the Big Rig, one of my oldest friends, produces the show and occasionally chimes in with his thoughts on the Cowboys. After all, he's a lifelong Cowboys fan, and he played high school, college, and semi-pro football. Welcome to Jot Talk, where sports is fluid. What's true today might not be true an hour, a day, or a month from now. I'm going to give you the truth straight. No chaser. Glad to have you aboard. Let's get it. Welcome to episode 115 of Jacques Talk. I'm Jean-Jacques Taylor, joined by my boy Big Joe and the Big Rig. What's the sit rep, my brother?
Let's see here. We are 49 seconds in. We are 5x5, and Operation Jacques Talk is a go.
I hope you're prepared to be entertained and dazzled for the next hour or so as me and Big Joe and the Big Rig break down what's going on with the Mavs and a few other sports tidbits. This is episode 115, which means, if you got a 15 in mind, because Zeke don't start wearing 15 till next year.
I thought, what was the quarterback from San Francisco? What did he wear last year?
What's his name? Trey?
Trey Lance.
I was having an old man moment. Of course, I know his name. But, yeah, I think he wore 15. Did he get that away and change his number? I don't know.
I think he changed to 5.
I think so. Does that mean because somebody else showed up wearing 15?
I don't know, but I'm trying to think. Off the dome.
There's not a lot of 15. It must be. There's probably some receiver.
I usually do it off the dome, but I can't think of nobody that's wore 15. This is coming from the 60s or something. No.
Nah.
No.
That is a...
I got nothing.
That's a Zeke Elliott. I just Googled it. Zeke Elliott is the only guy wearing 15.
Yeah.
And I think he's wearing 15 next year.
I think Trey Lance.
So that's it. Maybe that's why Trey Lance changed.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. I guess that's what it is.
There you go.
So, Zeke will look good in that 15. I kind of like the fact that he moved to 15. Represents a new time in Dallas, a new era. He can be a new dude as opposed to wearing his signatures. 21, and now 415 in San Francisco. So they got zip code, area code. So they got San Francisco in their mind. Maybe this is a little thing that'll help them beat San Francisco. That's grasping for straws, but hey, sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do. Show brought to you each and every Wednesday by Smokey John's Barbecue. Smokey John's Barbecue, 1820 West Mockingbird, is food to live for. Now, the catfish is good, and many can testify to that. The Wednesday wings, smoke wings every Wednesday. I've had those before, out of this world. But we all know, if you go into Smokey John's Barbecue and you listen to Jacques Talk, that the jam session bowl is high upon your list. One day, I need to check in with Content Dave and see what he can go through there and pick up a jam session bowl. I mean, even to the point where, hey, dog, so early in the day, you got the rest of the day to burn off whatever calories you eat. I'm just saying, it's an option. But that's the jam session bowl. It's a bowl with mashed potato base, mac and cheese base, and then you get your choice, 2 out of 5 smoked meats. Your boy usually rocks with the brisket and the sausage. And then I'm telling you, all that delicious stuff you find on a loaded baked potato, you know what I'm talking about, bacon bits, chives, cheese, sour cream, butter, all that stuff they put on it. Then they either drench it with sauce or drizzle it with sauce. Your choice. And it is food to live for. It's enough for 2 people, real easy. And if you got a little shorty, 6 or 7, it's enough for 3 people. Real talk, it's enough for 3. But I'm telling you, it is food to live for. Now, if you need Smokey John's in your life more immediately, you ain't got time over to 1820 West Mockingbird, then hey, all you got to do is go to the website, click on the marketplace, you can get the sauce or the rub right here, delivered to your crib in a couple days. I mean, really, does it get any better than that? And then let's keep it real. You can also, if you got to have it like today, then what you got to do is go to HEB. And they got HEBs all over the place. They got them in Waxahachie and Burleson and Allen and McKinney, wherever you need them. They got them in Frisco out there by the Star. If you need it, go get it. You can have it at your house today. That's the rub. And I was looking it up because Smokey John's has also got Father's Day special that they got going. Go check out the website at SmokeyJohns.com and see what we got going on for Father's Day. It is tremendous. Now, there's been a lot of debate, my friend, about the Mavericks, the series. We all know Game 3 coming up on Wednesday is the or Tuesday, I'm sorry. What is today? Today is Tuesday. On Wednesday is the end-all, be-all. If they lose that one, they're not going to win the series. It's going to be hard to win the series as it is. They're not going to win if they lose Game 3. And so I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people over the last few days. And I think the biggest question is, what's up with Kyrie? And I've really lumped it into two categories. Now, I got to admit to you, Doug, I'm a bit of an elitist sometimes. I know you find that hard to believe, but sometimes I'm a bit of an elitist. And so I was listening to some sports talk radio over the last couple of days while I'm working out. And the general consensus on Kyrie has been the Boston crowd got into his head. And the other thing is he's just playing inconsistently, and he's been inconsistent throughout the entire playoffs, if you really think about it. How do you feel about those two theories?
I think they both are BS. Because you're not giving Boston the credit enough for the way they playing. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
And I say this with all love. You get on my nerves sometimes. Okay. I get on your nerves sometimes.
All the time.
But then, okay, I was trying to be nice by saying sometimes. Yeah. You got to throw in all the time. But then, sometime when we're talking about sports, I say, see, that's why I ask my boy. Because we can have a legit conversation. And so I appreciate that, man. Because you're exactly right. It's not just because I agree with you.
That's some old backhanded.
That's not a backhanded compliment. That's not a backhanded compliment.
You watch too much Stephen A.
No, it's not.
You set me up.
Not about that.
You set me up. I'm great. And I love you, but you suck. Yeah, I got it. That's why I say all the time. Hey, man.
No.
I give good take.
But that's the whole point. No, that is the whole point. That's the whole point. And so I can respect that. I would say you give good takes. I don't always agree with them.
I wouldn't have you on here if I always agreed with them. You don't have to co-sign.
That ain't the point.
No, you don't have to co-sign.
Right. That's, and you know what? The depth of our relationship is such that I can say that's some stupid-ass stuff. And we can still talk on the phone the next day.
See? Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
We're going to get into those points about how Boston is defending him. Just a second. But I wanted to talk about these other points first. But you raised a great issue. I don't know why people find it hard to give credit for the way Boston is playing and the fact that Jrue Holiday and Derrick White and Jaylen Brown, when they put him on there, are all some of the best perimeter defensive players in the league.
Well,
so it makes sense.
They know Kyrie, though. You know.
Because they practiced and played against
him. They studied tape. They don't just roll the ball out. You know, and like you say, Jrue Holiday, one of the best defenders in the league at point guard. So he don't have to know Kyrie, but he taking tips. I mean, that's why when they switch, that's why when Jason Tatum stripped him, he know what Kyrie trying to do.
The same thing that
make you laugh, make you cry. They can't run the same. They can't do the same thing. How many times in the last two series where we go, damn, how did Kyrie get over there and he was over here and then he came back and he shook three guys? Well, what coach used to say, follow the waist.
Yeah.
You know, but people get dazzled by Kyrie and that damn handle. And Boston ain't going for that. It's kind of like you said, they ain't taking them head fakes and all of that. Yeah. So I don't think it's the crowd, or I don't think it's the other stuff.
Yeah. Right. And we're finna get into that in just a second. So when you look at Kyrie and you look at Boston, like Joe, I think it's silly to talk about the crowd. And here's why. Kyrie Irving is 32 years old. He's played in three, I think, NBA finals. He's dealt with some hostile crowds before. I'm just here to tell you. This is just my opinion, but I'm here to tell you. This couldn't be no worse. Couldn't be any more violent, any more vitriol being spewed his way than a Duke Carolina game. I'm just saying. But that being said, I don't think the crowd for elite NBA players, players at his level, I don't think the crowd is the end all be all. He's rattled by the crowd. I don't see that happening.
I think here's where the crowd make a little difference. I ain't hedging, but it make a little. Once you done lost the game and you sitting on the bench, you don't want to hear that. You ready to go. But I think it. I don't think it affects his play during the game. But I think after the game, when y'all know the game is over with, and people start getting on you and talking trash, and they all lick it up and they talking about everything under the sun. Yeah, that's irritating. Right. But I don't think it affect him during the game.
I will see that. And here's the other thing. I think perhaps, when you look at his record, I think it's now 12 straight losses to the Celtics. I don't really put a whole lot of stock into that as well, because this ain't tennis. It's not an individual matchup where it's me against you. And that's why we're doing it. It's not even baseball where I'm the pitcher and I'm really in control and you got guys in your lineup that own me. Just like there are other teams where I have a great winning streak against because I have a good matchup against them. I think when you look back at it, he's probably played teams where Boston was the better team and they just beat him. So I don't think Boston, the crowd has anything to do with it. I don't think, being in the garden and all that has anything to do with it. And I think you raised some great points. One, he played at Boston, and so they know all his weaknesses. They know all his tendencies. They know all his strengths. And what have we talked about, man, in terms of basketball? Basketball, to me, and again, I ain't breaking no news here, okay? I just like to point it out from time to time. When you look at these games, for the most part, okay, when cats get their feet set for shots, that thing going in the bucket 95% of the time. All right? When guys get to their spots and they can take a shot from their spot, that thing going in 95% of the time. So when you look at Kyrie, what's one of the things the Celtics have been able to do? They've been able to chase him off his spots so he hasn't been able to get exactly where he wants. And they've been able to pressure him. And they've been able to send a wave of defenders at him, whether it's White, whether it's Holiday, whether it's Brown, all young and athletic. And they've disrupted him and messed up his rhythm and his flow. And that, to me, is just what Joe said. And I've had to say this to a few people on Twitter. Can we act like Boston is a good team? can we act like they're a good team? Okay, check this out. They were number one in the NBA in offensive efficiency. They were number three in the NBA in defensive efficiency, all right? They won 7 games more than any other team. They had the best home record by 4 games, 37-4 at the crib. And they led the NBA in 20-point victories. They are a dynamic team in this year's NBA. They're not one of the all-time great teams. But for this year's NBA, they the best team. And so there are ways to beat the best team. But the Mavericks have not played their best basketball. So, I bring up all of that to say this about Kyrie, dog. Kyrie, in the regular season, averaged 25.6 points a game. He shot 49% from the field, which is terrific for a guard. I mean, that's fantastic. He shot 41% on threes, which again is fantastic. Averaged 5.2 assists, considering he is not nearly the dominant ball handler on his team. That too is fantastic. All right, so 49% from the field, 41% on threes, 5 assists, 25 points a game during the regular season. In the playoffs, he's averaging 47% from the field, 39% on threes, 5 assists, 22 points a game, 21.9 points a game. In this series right here, 35% from the field, 0 for 8 on threes, 3 assists a game, 14 points a game. Think about that. 25 points a game in the regular season, 14 points a game in this season. Shooting 50% from the field, basically, in the regular season. Shooting 35% in this series. Shooting 41% on threes in the regular season. 0 for 8 in this series. All that stuff we just told you about Jrue Holiday and Jaylen Brown and Derrick White and the game plan that the Celtics have put together.
Jason Tatum.
All of that, Jason Tatum, all of that has contributed to this. And the Mavericks' key is to figure out how to crack that code and get Kyrie unlocked. And so I have a theory, but how do they go about doing that? You still think it has to work inside out from the big guys?
Yeah, because that's where you get your matchup. That's where you get your matchup, your matchup problems. That's where you can get Boston problems, because if you go inside, they don't allow them to switch everything. See, they switching everything. They don't care who gets who. And that's why they're not blitzing that much. Because they got, like, White is a good defender. Jaylen Brown, Tatum, and definitely Holiday. And Al Horford is smart. And when you put Porzingis in there, he a rim protector. So, what the Mavericks playing? Five out? Where everybody's outside? And Luka go inside? Yeah. Ain't nobody switching. You see what I'm saying? Ain't nobody switching. So, I mean, ain't nobody moving. You know, they switching everything, but ain't nobody getting open. I mean, you got five out. Five people stay out. And they play two-on-two, and they get the best defender, and they let Luka get that 2 points. They don't care. I mean, he gotta work so hard to get an assist. He got 8 turnovers. But let me go back to how I think. Let me go back to how I think they was guarding Kyrie. This is how you think they guard Kyrie. Kyrie don't have a spot. He got all the spots. He can hit from anywhere on the floor. The best way to guard Kyrie is not to think. It's just move. Because he don't think. You understand? He don't have a pattern. That's what make him great. He can do whatever he want to get to the rim. And those guys end up thinking, I'm going to beat you right here. I'm going to cut you off right here. Then he go the other way and do some crazy stuff. I think what they're doing
is jitterbugging on him.
Yeah, they're not thinking at all. I think that's the thing, is sometimes you don't think, you just go. And they just D'ing him up. It's kind of like free flow offense versus free flow defense to me.
Now, that's a good way to say it. I think that's a really good point. And it's interesting to watch the way that they play. I mean, it really is. And you know, I don't think we pick this kind. They don't play like this in a regular season because you ain't got time to practice and your scouting reports are not so detailed. But it's really, really interesting to watch how the Clippers played the Mavericks, how Oklahoma City played the Mavericks, how Minnesota played the Mavericks, and now how Boston is playing the Mavericks. And, you know, let's keep it real. It didn't really take the Mavs long to crack the code on them first three teams. And the problem with Boston is, I keep saying crack the code. There might not be a code to crack against Boston because of the way that they play. It might just be the key. The crack in the code is when you get open shots, you got to hit them. Or you have to hit a much greater percentage than they have been hitting them. You know, everybody was talking about how many open shots Boston missed. Well, that's the NBA, man. How many open shots did the Mavericks miss? You know, and I think that's what Jason Kidd is talking about when he says somebody's got to put the ball in the basket because we got to find some offense and, you know, they got to find it from somewhere. You just have to believe in game three that the role players will play better. They'll feed off that energy. They'll get a little boost from the crowd. They'll be more comfortable. They'll feel confident. And this is the series right here. There's a good chance we get to 6 games if they can win this one. And then we'll see what happens. Maybe they can steal one and then take it back to Boston for 7. But if they don't get three, it's a wrap. I think we saw when Minnesota teams that are up 3-0 in the NBA playoffs are 155-0. Boom.
Didn't Boston get up 3-0 before and lose the championship? Who did they lose to?
I don't know.
Thinking they did. They got up in a series, I think, 3-0 and lost. I can't remember.
This is the problem with an apartment studio. There's been a hole in the wall outside. I think they were fixing something or tore something down for a minute. And it's been like that for a week and a half. I get on this fucking podcast for 1 hour and they want to start doing some work today. I mean, it's, you know, it's ridiculous, dog. It's just ridiculous. But that's life in the big city.
As people turn down, I mean, as people turn down the phones and radios and stuff. Yeah,
I mean, it's ridiculous, man.
You got to get them egg cartons. You got to get them egg cartons and soundproof your room, man. That's what you got. You got to do like what's my man name? Hustle and Flow. Get them egg cartons, staple them to the wall.
See if there's any way they can stop it.
They ain't gonna.
Yeah, hold up one sec. All right, I felt like we just had a moment like my man Bomani Jones does, where he goes to the music and him and his guests talk about something that they don't really want y'all to hear. Well, I had Content Dave go out there and kick ass and take names and tell him to turn that shit down because we're trying to do the Jacques Talk podcast.
Dave ain't gonna say it like that. He's a lot more diplomatic. No, he's a lot more diplomatic because you'd be out there fighting with him. How about that?
I mean, you think he's diplomatic. I think his first thing was, excuse me, kind sirs. We're trying to do a highly rated podcast in here. Would you please, turn the noise down at least for a little while, please, sir? And they gave him the eye, and he said, hey, motherfucker, we got your show
that.
To do.
He didn't say that. Unless Dave got five guns and no karate, he got you for backup, so he ain't say that.
That sound like one of them backhanded compliments.
It's a straight diss. He got you for backup. Hey, you better go out there and ask him the right way, because you ain't whooping nobody.
I've been climbing Mount Kilimanjaro lately, man. I whip a lot of asses lately.
Yeah.
I'm not the one, dog.
Well, okay.
F around and find out. You know how many people have done that to me, dog?
And
I'm just saying,
back
man.
Back to
I'm
our
just,
programming, because it's getting deep in here, dog.
I'm just saying. All right. Many have tried, all but a couple have failed. And those who did emerge with their limbs intact, they have a story to tell.
In 30 years, I'm saying 0-0.
I mean, I did most of my fighting as a young man. I think I told you I retired with a 183-3-3 record, dog. So I'm not saying I was infallible. Yeah, I had a couple of Ali Frazier trilogies with some folks, but I emerged unscarred. But I am battle tested. So F around, find out if you want to.
Everybody that give that much information on how battle tested they are is not battle tested.
Hey, like I said, lots of people can find out for themselves.
No,
including that dude in the parking lot the other day.
Okay. Tough guys don't talk tough. Nah. There you go. Tough guys do not talk tough.
No, tough guys can talk tough after the fact.
No, they don't. No, they don't. You don't even hear them coming.
Hey, I'm just. We'll move on, man.
Yeah. You need to.
You don't. This is all I'm saying.
You need to move. Keep it pushing. Because tough guys don't talk tough. No.
Do we hear any more noise right now? No.
Okay.
Because David handled that situation.
Right.
The way I asked him to handle it.
He did.
Thank you, Content Dave.
Yeah.
All right, man. So now we got that cleared up. Game 3 of the NBA Finals is Wednesday night, and we'll see what the Mavericks have left. I think, obviously, they'll come out with a lot of energy, a lot of force. They got to get off to a good start. They've gotten off to They got off to a good half a quarter in game one. They played a good first quarter in game two. They were 8-1 when leading after the first quarter. But as we discussed, man, I didn't like the feel of that game at halftime because they should have been up, not down by five at halftime or down by three at halftime. So I didn't like that vibe. They have got – and Kyrie Irving pointed this out. Not only do they have to get ahead, they got to play with a lead so that they can play their basketball so they can dictate the pace and the tempo and make, as you like to say, make Boston chase the game for a little bit. Boston ain't chased nothing, really. I think the Mavericks' biggest lead was 8, and that was in the first quarter the other day. They didn't lead at all in the second half. You know, so they haven't made Boston feel any anxiety, any angst, any anything. Boston been playing free and easy basically the whole series. That needs to change in game three. And so we say this all the time. I assume in game three, Kyrie will assert himself and turn in a Kyrie-like performance. That's what I assume will happen. We all know what Luka is going to do. If there was any doubt, it's all been erased. He is that dude. The question is, who do you see as the X factor or factors in game three that can elevate the Mavericks to a dub?
Is Kyrie? And did I hear Luka say something about hitting free throws?
Yeah.
Okay. That'd be a good start right there.
Yeah. No, I mean they can't they have to hit whatever their reasonable amount of free throws are. They need to be in the 85-90% range. But they've been one of the worst free throw shooting teams all year. So
they've been the worst shooting still, free throw team in the playoffs.
That being said, I can live with 75%. I can't live with less than that. And they were 60-some percent the other day.
16-24.
Yeah, part of that is why they couldn't separate early. Them 1 or 2 points, Luka missed 2, Gafford missed 2. Those 1 or 2 points at those particular times were different between being up 8 and being up 6. Then a turnover, then a bucket. All of a sudden, you up 11 or you up 10, and the whole psychology changes.
Oh, you got some clarity. You got some clarity today. I like that because you gave me the whole business Sunday night. Maybe you were sleepy. Maybe you were sleepy. You gave me the business about free throw. I don't know. I don't know.
We were both saying the same thing. Basically, I just said I don't expect perfection from the Mavericks. You know, I mean That's all I was saying, man. Didn't say the free throws weren't important. Didn't say they didn't need to make them, because they do. But, you know, I have a higher standard of making free throws for Luka than I do for Daniel Gafford, who's a 64 career percent free throw shooter. So that's all I'm saying. We're not going down the free throw rabbit hole this morning. Why you say it like that, man?
I don't know. You need a clarity on that. I just said they need to hit free throws, and we went around the world about that. But I got you. I'm just saying that's the start right there, because you're leaving points on the court. I mean, you're leaving points at the line, and then they're gonna play. They're gonna beat you up if you ain't gonna, you know, if you ain't gonna hit nothing. That's just that.
Well, they still got to have – somebody else has got to ride with them. Those two alone will not beat the Celtics. Somebody else has got to put in a good performance. You know, P.J. Washington is probably the odds-on leader to do that because he's going to touch the ball a lot. And he has the ability to do that. We haven't really seen Derrick Jones Jr. much offensively. I don't know if this is his kind of game because they don't run anything for him. And this is not a game where he's getting open on, you know, lobs on the break. I mean, it's not built. This game doesn't seem to be built for him offensively. So I don't know what he can do. And then that goes back to the point Joe has made numerous times about, can you get some play out of Gafford or Lively, some points in the post where you're running some stuff for them. So we'll see how that works out. But, you know, and then, you know, it's a good test for Jason Kidd. He's got a couple of days. He's got to make some adjustments, especially offensively. I think defensively, they pretty much did a solid job the other day. You can always do a little bit better rotation-wise. But offensively, they got to find something. He was a preeminent point guard. He understands offensive basketball. He got to help them unlock a few things and see if they can make it happen. Let's move on to one of my I decided to turn this into a hodgepodge at the last minute because there's a couple things I wanted to talk about real quick. I'll get the first one out the way. The Edmonton Oilers are getting destroyed by Florida. So any thoughts I had about the Cup going back to Canada, I don't feel good about that because the Panthers have outscored them 7-1. Edmonton doesn't have an even strength goal in the series. I mean, it was a 4-4, but it's not a. They don't have a 5-on-5 goal in the series. Florida's got the best goalie. They playing the best hockey. This looks like a probably a gentleman's sweep to me, 4-1, Florida. But we'll check back in on that. So you're not going to be able to say, hey, the Cup has returned to Canada, nor does it look like you say, well, at least the Stars lost to the champions, for those of you who find solace in that. Next, did you ever think Danny Hurley was going to the Lakers?
No, I didn't think it was a good fit at all, but, you know, there's some odd things they do in basketball. People end up in odd places, you know what I'm saying? These teams do what they want. They'll hire a coach that nobody ever thought of. Then they'll hire somebody just to be hiring them. So I don't think – I'm going the long way to say anything is possible.
I'm going to tell you, dog, I was at the gym with my boys when I saw it flash across. And I literally said, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And my boys were like, why? He's just a great college coach. And I just looked at them. I said, duh, this is just your boy now. I said, just like that, even though I was talking to them. I said, I don't see any way Danny Hurley's style of coaching fits today's NBA for 82 games. I just can't see it. That's before you even talk about all the other stuff. The intensity level that he has, the demanding approach that he has, to me, that's great for college. It's 30 games, and it really ain't even 30 games because you're going to win, you know, 26 of them when you step on the court. But for the tournament and for the two or three big games you have and for the Big East tournament, whatever, okay, fine. That's good. But he is so intense. I heard him talking a couple weeks ago about how I don't even want some players in Connecticut because they're entitled and they're this and they're that and they don't fit what we want to do. And I'm like, duh, that's most of the NBA. And so from a personality thing, it just – I just could never see it going. And then when you throw in the fact that he's a true East Coast guy, born, raised, loves it, exudes everything about him, says East Coast, you're just like, I don't know, man, that whole West Coast thing just don't feel like a good fit. Then, you know, then your wife is not going to be happy because all her friends on the East Coast, all her life is on the East Coast. And we get into that question that I ask people all the time, especially people who got money. Asked it to a friend of mine earlier this week. The money that they offered him, bro, would not change his lifestyle. Like, I think they offered him basically $10 million a year, which sounds like a lot of money. And to me and Joe, it is a lot of money. But when you take out taxes from living in California, and you compare the money and the cost of living and stuff, it was like $1.5 million raise. And while that's good, I mean, who's turning down $1.5 million raise? Well, obviously Danny Hurley did. In the big picture, there's nothing he can't buy making $4.5 million that he couldn't buy making $6 million take home. So from a financial standpoint, there was no incentive to leave. From a personal standpoint, there was no incentive to leave because Connecticut is going, what? When's the last time we had a three-peat NCAA champion? Has it been since UCLA, bro?
Yeah, it got to be. I don't remember. I knew UCLA did it, but I don't remember.
So, yeah, I don't think that we've had a three-peat champion since UCLA. They got a legitimate opportunity to win three in a row, which now you're in the history books in college basketball. And so I think there's a lot of appeal to that for him personally. And then the final thing is, man, can we be honest for a second? Just for a second. The Lakers are a shit show of an organization right now. They really are.
But that's my point to where they decided to go for a guy just don't name and who he is and all of that stuff. And he didn't – good for him that he didn't fall for the glitz and glamour of L.A. and the opportunity to coach the Lakers. It ain't the same job. It ain't the same job.
No.
And here's my thing. When the Mavericks hired Jason Kidd, I was not sure if they wasn't trying to do the same thing. Because Jason hadn't been – great wherever he's been. Then he had to redo his reputation, you know, as a coach. But they still crying about him in Milwaukee. You say well, Jason Kidd to the Greek Freak, he start throwing up his hands like, what's up? You know, I'm just saying it's one of them things where when they hired him, I was like, yeah, is that kind of hire or should they have got somebody else? But it turned out to work out. It worked out, but...
well. Here's why it worked out. Is because he was a mess after leaving Milwaukee. And then, ironically enough, based off of this conversation, he went to the Lakers and he changed it. Because all the stories that came out when the Mavericks hired him were, if he hadn't gone to the Lakers and it was clear from his conversation that he had changed. Like, all the people at the Lakers were like, we don't know, well, this guy y'all talk about in Milwaukee, we ain't seen that guy around here. Like, he understands. And it's funny because he was a star, but, you know, maybe he couldn't see the forest for the trees when he transitioned from player to coach. And because he wasn't an assistant, I think they just hired him to be a coach. That, you know, because he just said this a couple days ago. He said, you know, once I got to the Lakers, and I saw how, who was the Lakers coach then? Vogel or whatever. How he was working with LeBron and trying to include him and trying to deal with different personalities. He said it finally dawned on me that the X's and O's are great, but I got to get the relationships down. If I get the relationships down, then the guys will play for me and it's easy to get all the other stuff down. And I don't have to be a tyrant to do that. And what's funny is, all the stuff you heard about him in Milwaukee, you see none of that in Dallas. You know, like, he don't even yell at the officials. He talked to them, but he don't yell at them. Like, he hadn't had a single tech all year. You know, and he has a very soft voice, and he gives us that soft BS at the press conference. And I call it BS because he is clearly presenting someone at the press conferences. Like, that's not the real J. Kidd. He presents.
It's like Belichick. Belichick do the same thing. He mumbles at the press conference.
Exactly.
Mumbles at the press conference. And then he be cussing them players out, giving the referees the business. But, yeah, I think what we talking about, if the Lakers would have hired Hurley, it would have been like, it wasn't necessarily like that, but it's kind of like when Steve Nash was hired with the Nets. They just wanted a name. They just wanted to do something. Yeah. A figurehead, a name or something. Just to say, hey, look, we're trying to do the right thing. But good for Hurley. Good for him. He got to be romanced and all of that. And he didn't fall for the okey-doke. Take your ass back to Connecticut and live like a king. Go ahead.
Now, if you J.J. Redick or one of them cats who was on the early list, you want the job now?
Depends. J.J. Redick can get in there and coach for opportunity and maybe get a job again. Just to see what it's like. It's an opportunity for him to be a coach and try to put his knowledge together. And he think LeBron love him. And LeBron only love him so far. Because what was my man named? Bland. LeBron signed off on that. And that guy got up out of there real quick. You know.
Yeah.
So it's like NBA is a whole different animal. And the pros is a whole different animal. Like you talking about control. What happened to Urban Meyer? Can't do the same thing. You can't walk around kicking people and talking noise to people and challenging people like that. It's not college.
So, no, that's a great example.
Yeah, so.
Now, let's move on to my next hodgepodge topic. Caitlin Clark. She's an interesting person. And I had this conversation 2 days ago with somebody about the WNBA. And I'm shocked at the number of WNBA conversations I'm having. And not all of them center around Caitlin Clark. She's not on the Olympic team. Maybe she'll end up on the Olympic team because of injuries later. I didn't think it was some great crime not to put her on the Olympic team. That's point number one. Did you think it was a crime not to put her on the Olympic team?
No, I didn't think so. I listened to two or three explanations. Plus, I think one of the things I was hearing, I ain't gonna mention no names, just one of them guys I can't stand, Stephen A. Smith. And he was saying, well, they put Christian Laettner on the Dream Team. Yeah, no Isaiah, but you got Christian Laettner. No Shaq, but you have Christian Laettner. Christian Laettner shouldn't have been on the damn Dream Team. They shouldn't have, you know, I don't think that's a good example. I think you earn your spot. And RG3 had the best answer for all that crap. Yeah, it does good for Caitlin to be on there. It does good. I mean, it does good for the NBA. WNBA. It does good, you know, business, marketing, all of that for the players. But it don't do Caitlin Clark no good. Clark need to go into the off season. Them girls didn't get an off season.
No.
You know, and she need to go into the off season and get better. It'd be better for her to be at home.
No, I would agree with that. I think it's what you said. She need to go in the off season and get bigger, faster, stronger.
Yep.
Because even if you look at her, now clearly I don't see anything that makes me think she won't evolve into one of the best players in the league. But if you look at her body type, like, she got nothing there. She needs to get stronger. She needs to spend some time in the weight room. I ain't saying she got to bulk up and have bulging biceps, but it's clear that she ain't got enough strength to deal with the physicality of the league. And the thing you always got to remember is with the WNBA, they ain't got but 12 teams.
That's right.
So you really are getting the best of the best.
That's right.
Are playing. There's no friend. Then
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, they will send your ass home in a minute if you can't play in the WNBA.
Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, think about the NBA if the NBA only had 12 teams. I mean, think about it. Yeah. Think about all the, like, damn. Like, Derrick Jones Jr. wouldn't be in the league.
Not at all.
You know what I'm saying? And we'd like, damn, he really good. He wouldn't be in the league. He spent all this time trying to find a team. So, if the NBA had 12 teams, think about how good each of them teams would be, even the bad ones, in terms of stacked with talent. That's what the WNBA is. I didn't mind her not being on the team. And here's what I think people have overlooked and what I haven't really heard anybody talk about. And we've seen this with the men, and the women should learn a lesson from the men, and maybe they have, and that's why they didn't put her on the team, which is this. It's not an all-star team. It's a basketball team. You got to have some guys who play defense. You got to have some women who can hit the three. You got to have some rebounders. You have to have some scores. You have to have a team. And when you look at Caitlin Clark, right now, she's not one of the best players in the NBA, in the WNBA, which means she's not one of the best players in the world. Doesn't mean she couldn't help, because she could. But there are other people, including Dallas's point guard, Arike Ogunleye. I butchered that one. Ogunleye, who's averaging, 26 points a game and leading the league in scoring. She got bypassed. She would be a better option because at least we know what she could do. She can score. She can put the ball in the bucket against anybody, and she can create her own shot. The second thing is, which I don't think anybody has really discussed, man, is when it's a team, you don't want to go win a game 108-65. I scored 37 points. You scored 22 points. We up at the podium. and they're asking us, so why do you think Caitlin didn't play? She only played 4 minutes in this game. Or why do you think Caitlin, you know, is not part of the rotation? Like, and that's going to happen because everything's going to be directed at Caitlin. It's like when Mike McCarthy set up them press conferences with Jason and Steven and don't nobody ask him no questions because it ain't about him. That being said, everything at the Olympics would be about Caitlin. And you know how, and I think the last part of that conversation is, why did teams not want Colin Kaepernick after a certain point when he'd been out of the league? Why did they not want Tim Tebow at a certain point when he'd been out of the league? And they were like, hey, we want to try to come back. Because you're too big a distraction. Everything becomes about you the moment you show up, and it's no longer about the team. Every question is about you. Every this is about you. Everything revolves around you. And if you were an elite player, that would be okay. But you're not an elite player right now. And so I think it becomes a huge distraction to the players on the team. And it doesn't create the, it doesn't foster the kind of good feeling that you want amongst the team. And the last thing I'll say about it is somebody was like, well, Diana Taurasi doesn't need to be on there. She's 55 years old. She ain't done this. She ain't done that. All she does is have leadership and experience. Mm. There's something to be said for leadership and experience. Like, hey, don't worry about it. I've seen this before. Or, you know, what have the Mavericks told you about Marquise Moore? Whatever his name is.
Marquise Miller. Morris.
Morris. Every player you talk to, he one of the most important players on the team. He speak, everybody listen. When last time you seen him on the court, though?
Never. like you done his ass on.
Thank you. Like, there's something to be said. Like, dog, I sit there and listen sometimes. I just shake my head like, what is wrong with y'all?
Well, you know, like, you know,
do y'all not see any of this?
You know who said the same thing you're saying is, I can't think of the young lady's name, but she was on First Take, and she was saying, you got to have a team concept. You got to have.
Okay, it's probably Monica McNutt.
No, it wasn't her. Hey, she ain't going to be back on there for a little while. But I can't remember her name, but it was two young ladies on there, and they was over talking the hell out of them. And I don't watch the show. I watch clips, but it was crap. But she was saying, hey, it's a team. And on another show, she was saying that Europe is coming. We can't play them. Like you said, it's not an all-star game. We want to keep winning gold, so we got to take this thing seriously. I'm not.
Yes,
I don't listen
Europe
to
Europe is coming.
Yeah, I don't listen to a lot of that rhetoric. I think Caitlin Clark was an outstanding college player. I think she got a chance to be an outstanding pro player. I like the fact that she getting them jerseys sold and people coming out to watch her. But I ain't trying to bend everything to that. You got to, you know, the Team USA basketball is going to survive without it. They're going to win without it. They're getting the notoriety now because people going to watch them now. They ain't going to watch them like if Caitlin was there, but they sure going to watch them now to see if you can go, aha, see, y'all should have had Caitlin. Well, that ain't going to happen because they good. They pretty good, and they serious about what the hell they doing.
Right. You know? And I think the last point about that is, when you put Caitlin on the team, like, if you talk about a team and you talk about, oh, there's all this jealousy and people think she's got so much attention and this and that, how do you think they're going to treat her when they feel like she didn't earn her spot? It's not going to get any better. And so I think there's a lot of good reasons that she didn't need to be on the team this year. And I have no doubts that she, because she's already shown you flashes. So no doubt that when she, over the next 2 or 3 years, she'll be averaging 20-some points a game and doing what she does. And she'll be one of the better players on the team in the 28 Olympics. And
Caitlin,
then she can have her run.
She's going to be tough, though. She's going to be tough. The reason I think so is because we ain't seen Caitlin in the WNBA yet. We ain't seen the Caitlin we saw in college where she brash, she talking trash. She's just kind of feeling her way right now. Then I get sick of people sticking the microphone in her face because you know she's trying to be nice as she can be. And she just not there.
And she really don't want to be.
She a dog, man. You know what I'm saying? She scrappy. She talk a lot of trash. And she just going, well, it's not no big deal. I mean, I understand, Caitlin. Dude, I understand what she doing. You know?
I don't have any doubt that she going to be in the gym in the off season shooting 1,000 jumpers. Talking about, that's for you. This one for you.
Yep.
This one for you.
Yep.
This one for you. She going to be in there lifting weights. I got, And I have no doubt that she'll come out next year and really, really put it up because, and I think you may have mentioned this, you have to remember, she played an entire college season. This is more basketball than she's ever played because I think they had 3 weeks off and the game started. She didn't get no off season, no training camp, no nothing. So she's played straight through like the rest of the rookies. Their bodies need a break. And they'll get one in the offseason. And so I think we'll come back and see her next year, and she'll be a much improved player. And I'll be watching the WNBA because, as we discussed the other day, man, I like the storylines. And the more you watch women's college basketball, which is really good this year, the more you pay attention to those players, then they jump in the league. It's just like the NBA used to be when we used to follow college basketball. Those guys come in the league with their own set of storylines and stuff. You follow those, and now you're into it. Because what? You know players on almost every team or something like that. And so you can follow the game better. And it just makes for, I mean, it makes sense in terms of why you follow it and why you watch it. But that's our hodgepodge of sports today. Let's go to the block, man. I want to put out a public service announcement. I did not almost die, literally. I was speaking figuratively. But it's good to know that y'all love your boy and that y'all were genuinely concerned about your boy. And what I'm getting at, bro, is that I went on my second fight. I had my second fight with Cedar Ridge Preserve in Duncanville last weekend. And I took a video at the start of the walk, or the hike. It's a 4-mile hike. And I said, hey, I feel pretty good right now. We'll see what I look like at the end. And I took another video about 3/4 of the way through. And I said, hey, 2 weeks ago, I was near death and I couldn't appreciate this scenery I'm seeing right now. Check it out. Onward and upward. Well, when I said near death, people thought I was really dead. Now, I mean, I felt like I was dying on the inside. But I wasn't really dead. So to prepare, the first hike killed me. As I told you, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I thought it was just a couple miles out, a couple miles back. I didn't eat. I didn't hydrate. I didn't do nothing to prepare. I just showed up. It was a workout arrogance is what I call it. Well, this week, hey, man, I prepared for the fight. I said, oh, I put out some flyers. Fight with Cedar Ridge Preserve. Had the date out there. Should have hired you as the promoter, man. I mean, I was at the gym. I was doing the step mill. Yep, that's right. I was on the Stairmaster trying to get them glutes and them thigh quads and them hamstrings right for the elevation. 2 days out, I changed my diet up. Started eating cleaner, drinking water. All day Friday, was drinking water. Woke up at 5:30. On hike day and started drinking water. Had 32 ounces before I even started the hike. And we started at 7:30. Oh, yeah. I was on Amazon. Got some hiking shoes. Got a Camelback, which is that backpack that has the water plugged into it. Ordered some electrolyte tablets. Dog, I was ready for the fight. And let me tell y'all. I felt good. I felt strong. 3/4 of the way through, right after I stopped at the little pond, I took my electrolyte tabs because I had tried them during the week and I was still feeling good. I was like, let me take them while I'm feeling good instead of while I'm feeling bad. And I took them and I didn't really feel anything. And then about 10 minutes later, man, it's like they kicked in and they carried me for that last... super duper steep climb, and I felt good. So I shaved 15 minutes off my time. I was not exhausted at the end. And here's the only thing I had, bro. And I thought about you. Really, I did. 4 mile hike. About a mile and a quarter into it, I started feeling a blister come in on my bottom of my foot. About 2 miles into it, it was definitely a blister. And the last mile was like, oh, snap, this hurt. And it wasn't that I didn't have the right kind of shoes in, because I broke my hiking shoes in during the week. And Joe probably cussed me out now. My socks were not thick enough, bro. I didn't pay enough attention to my socks. And when I got home and looked at it, I had a blister about the size of a half a dollar, for those of you of a certain age, right under, at the base of my toe, at the base of my foot, right up under my toes. And then I had another smaller one on my left foot. And so I spent the next couple days wearing padded socks and tennis shoes, 2 pairs of socks and tennis shoes. And my boy said hiking shoes typically are a little wider, and if you don't have the right socks, your foot will slide them a little bit more.
Yep.
And that causes the friction and the blister, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that the circumference of your shoe make the difference, because you sliding back and forth. Yeah.
Which, when I had my tennis shoes the first week, because I was unprepared, obviously they didn't slide that much because they're tennis shoes and they fit my foot right.
Right.
So I've been wearing 2 pairs of socks all week because my foot is just now getting back to where I can walk around and it not feel sore and not feel hurt. But I finished the fight, shaved 15 minutes off my time. I feel like I could have shaved about 22 minutes off my time. 20 to 22 minutes if my foot hadn't been so sore for the last 2 miles. Because, I mean, I was really hobbling at the end. I like challenges like this. And so I've been preparing again this week. I'm going out of town for Father's Day, so I won't do it this week. But 2 weeks from now, we'll be back at it. And it's kind of like my Saturday thing now. We go on a hike. And, you know, now my boy wants to run downhill and walk uphill. I ain't ready for all that. I'm just trying to complete the course and not be exhausted. And once I get to that point, I think then, okay, let's see if I can do a little running downhill and a little walking uphill, and we'll see how it goes. But that's this week's hiking adventure. I gave the victory to the Cedar Ridge Preserve, a unanimous decision, 115-114, 116-113, 116-113, unanimous decision for Cedar Ridge Preserve. But I feel good about my training, and I will be back. And someday soon, I'm going to emerge victorious in my fight with Cedar Ridge Preserve in Duncanville.
Let's see here. Let me see. You 57 years old?
Yes, sir.
I think that's a win.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, bro.
It's a win. Don't be running and shit, though. I don't know about that, player. I don't know. It's more going to hurt than them down. You'll get more than them blisters, your ass fall down running downhill. That mountain going to beat your ass all the way. It's going to tell you, when you fall off a hill or a mountain like that with gear on, the gear beats your ass, the mountain beats your ass, and mentally you beat your own ass for running in the first place. Sometimes you can't do what other people do. I'm just saying.
But it's a win. You raise a great point.
It's a win. If you 57, you getting down like that, it's a win.
Well, I appreciate that. Now, let me tell you something. My boy was chastising me because he's a pusher. He's a leader. And, you know, like I said, he's a former professional athlete. And so he's like, come on, man, let's go. Mm-hmm. And so finally, after I cussed him out, I said, dog, this is not about fatigue. Last week, it was about fatigue. This is about, as Joe just said, I'm not finna run down this thing and bust my ass. And said, this is on my second time on this trail, so I don't know it like you. I'm being very cautious. I have no desire to fall. I have no desire to sprain my ankle. I have no desire to do none of that. So I'm a little more cautious. going up and down. Now, you know, we got some straightaways. Okay, I'll do a little bit on that. But, nah, going up and down, dog, nah, not going to happen. I don't care how much you try to motivate me, none of that.
I got a little side note for you. I watched a video on Facebook, and I don't know, man. You know, you're a light-skinned brother. And I'm going to say something here. Most people in my family are light-skinned. And when that sun when that sun tear your ass up and that heat tear your ass up, y'all get gray. You was
gray.
You was gray, dog. You was a little your face was a little, it's a different color than what y'all. See what I'm saying? This is a little shaded. You was tired. And
I thought you was gonna say red.
Nah, just to me it's I remember my mom, I coached two little league games back to back. And one at noon and one at like 3. She thought she could hang, and I was like, "Mom, you need to go to the car. You know, you can't ice water and hope and all of that and want to watch this game is great, but you need to go to the car." You know, and she went to the car, and she had that look you had when you was talking about, "Man, it's been rough out here." Hey, man, like I said, you was changing colors, bro. But that just, you know, that's what I was thinking. I was like, "Yep. He doing the damn thing because his ass don't look regular right now." That's my point. So I'm impressed with that. I'm impressed with that. I ain't fooling with that. Any of them brothers out there running mountains walking mountains and hiking and kayaking and doing whatever at our age, power blading and all of that. I ain't mad at you. You know, I ain't mad at you. So it's all good.
I like the challenge. So, you know, I cuss all the way through it, but then I like it at the end. What can I say? It's kind of like lifting weights or working out. And sometimes I hate it when I'm in the midst of it, but I like it before and after. Father's Day coming up. That means different things to different people. I decided to do something a little different this year for Father's Day, although I did check with my sister because it's kind of a family event. I want to make sure she felt she didn't feel not included. But she actually had some important thing to do because she's important these days. So I'm going out of town to visit my brother in Phoenix for Father's Day. And I'm taking my son with me. And then my dad is going to join us in Phoenix. So it's just the fellas, just the men. And we hope to have an epic Father's Day weekend. And I decided to do that. One, I enjoy my brother. I mean, I saw him. He came through for my granddaughter's graduation. And every time I hang out with my brother, who's much younger than me, he's in his mid-30s. I just remember how much I love that dude and how much I enjoy hanging around that dude. Because we had great conversations, and he's crazy, and he keeps me young.
Oh, he a good crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he a good crazy. Yeah, I like Chad.
And then I enjoy hanging around my son, and then I enjoy hanging around my dad. You know, I talk to him usually once a week on Sundays. We solve all the world's problems in 30 or 45 minutes. But as he gets older, even though he's in great shape and works out 3 or 4 times a week, and doesn't look anywhere close to his age, I just want to make sure that because we all live in different quadrants of the country, that we put some eyes on each other on a regular basis, whether it's his birthday or whether it's Father's Day or whether it's Christmas or, you know, whatever. If we can put eyes on each other 3 or 4 times a year, I just think it's good as he gets older. And I'm trying to forge some memories for my son, since he didn't grow up around him because he lived in another state. So all of that kind of stuff, man. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be epic. It's going to be great. And hopefully I have a few details to tell y'all next week when I get back. How much time did you spend wanting to be a father? Meaning, did you grow up like, "I can't wait to have kids," or like, "All right, baby, if you want some, we can have some. It's all good." What was your take on fatherhood?
The whole family thing. I wanted the whole family thing. We was talking about dreams maybe a couple of two or three shows ago. One of mine was to be a family man, to be married and have kids and stuff like that. So I put my all into it. And that's what I wanted to be. So I should say this. Once I met my stepdad, I knew what it meant to be a father. He took care of two households. He did a really good job of grooming me. I met him when I was 19. And, man, I just watched him work hard. And I watched him do things with my mom and put up with things and love her ass. And they, you know what I'm saying? It was just one of them things where it was like, you know what? If I can be like that, I'll be okay, because I didn't get to play pro ball like I wanted to. That was probably my only dream, my only real dream. But my dreams came true. Some days since I've been retired and I'm at home every day, I don't feel like that every day, but my dream came true when I married the finest girl in Kaufman County. I see her on my ass every day nowadays, but yeah.
Right.
No matter what I did, whether I played pro ball, I drove a truck, I was in the service, I'd have married the same woman, you know, because I was ready for kids with her, and I don't know if she was ready. I wanted about six.
After, did you really?
Yeah, after three, she said, make sure, before she fell asleep, she said, hey, make sure they tie my tubes, right? I said, you got it. I'm sure they got orders already, but she said, make sure. This is it. The last one, that's it. So, you know, it's all good. I wouldn't change nothing. Nothing. Especially like you have dreams, you want to do this, 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 and this, and you feel like, you know, what's funny is once I had them children, I wouldn't change my life because they wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be here exactly where they are now. Good, bad, ugly, whatever. It wouldn't be here if I changed my life. So I don't really have regrets like that, because if I'd have done one thing, my daughter wouldn't be here. My two boys wouldn't be here. You know, so it is what it is. And I've enjoyed the father part. Now, parenting after 25 or all of that, that's been a whole nother story. But raising them as kids, the water pistol fights, video games, going to the swimming pool, hell yeah. I wouldn't change none of that, because I'm a big kid myself. And the reason I work so hard, so they can have toys and I can have my toys too.
Right, right.
We all had toys. They get a remote control car, I get a remote control car. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah. I'm not saying I'm unusual, but for whatever reason, being married, I wanted kids, but dude, I'm just being honest with y'all. I probably would have been that dude who had a baby till he had a boy. And if I had 5 or 10, I just would have had 5 or 10. I needed a son. And I ended up, because my granddaughter is only 2 years younger than my son, I feel like I ended up with the boy and the girl anyway. But for whatever reason, and maybe it's because my parents got divorced and my dad lived in a different state, I really wanted to be that father that I wished I had had as a kid to a son. Not that I wouldn't have wanted a daughter, because I would have loved on a daughter. Ask my granddaughter. She gets so much love, she's like, please stop. But my son came out, man. I was like, okay, life is over. I'm good. And one of my favorite things to do now is every morning look at Facebook memories and just all the stuff that we did when he was a youngster and all the fun we had with him and my granddaughter. And, you know, I enjoy fatherhood, man. I think it's fantastic. And one of the best feelings I have is that my closest friends are all great fathers. Not half-assed fathers, not pretty good fathers. All my closest friends are great fathers. And so it's always, to me, a rewarding feeling and a great example to see that You know, it's other guys doing, handling their business, doing what they do. And I'm finna keep it real with y'all. Especially in a world where so many black fathers don't handle their business for whatever reason. And so it's good that my friends all handle their business. And it's a really cool thing to see. The effort that they put into raising their kids. And all of that, man. Because it ain't easy. And ain't no handbook. And everybody has screw-ups as parents that they wish they had handled situations differently. But all you can do is learn from it, grow from it, and pass that knowledge on. So, we still got a few days to Father's Day, but...
I ain't going to Arizona. I'm either going to do one of three places. And that's it, you know. And that's it. You know, restaurants.
I don't know what we're doing. My brother's in charge of the itinerary. But I will say this. I like to just put this out there in the universe. Maybe it'll touch somebody, maybe it won't. But I believe in this, whether it's Mother's Day or Father's Day. If you don't have a great relationship with your dad or your father, you ain't got to wait till Sunday. Just reach out. And maybe a simple, hey, how you doing? What's been up? Don't have to be a deep conversation. Hey, I was thinking about you. How you doing? How's it rolling? What's going on? And maybe that will thaw the ice and you can turn it into a relationship. Because, as we all know, Doug, they ain't here forever, man. And they can be gone in an instant. I had a really good friend of mine, JT. Same age as I am. Okay, maybe 58. Good friend of mine. Been in my house two or three times over the years. Had a massive stroke a couple weeks ago. Still in the hospital. Sending prayers his way. But, you know, it's just a reminder, man, as we get older, that either we might not be here tomorrow, or those our parents who we love or who we grew up or, you know, who raised us might not be here tomorrow. And so you don't want them to go without, if you want to, without at least checking in on them. Hey, what's up? How you doing? So that's my little public service announcement. You know. So to all the fathers out there, keep doing what you're doing. If you've been a half-ass daddy, guess what? You can change that shit today. You'll be a real daddy. I'm serious.
Listen, if you're a half-ass daddy, your kids is young, you change that today. But if you've been half-ass and I ain't seen you, I don't want to see you.
Well, you know.
But
I'm not going to.
This coming from a place where I've healed things with me and my dad. You know, I ain't going to say half-ass, but he wasn't always there. But if my dad comes here today, we good. We talk, we chill, all of that stuff.
Right.
You gotta forgive him. You have to forgive what your dad has done to move on with what you want to do.
Right. Because it's gonna keep that person who they are today.
Yeah, you gonna keep being stuck if you don't forgive him. You know.
See, you raised a great point that I wasn't gonna say anything about, but I'll say it real quick. Like a lot of kids, my grandson had a reward ceremony. He's 9 years old. His mom and dad have split. And he sees his dad fairly regularly, but his dad's a truck driver. So there will be some stretches where he don't see him for a minute. And he probably hadn't seen him in, I'm just guessing, maybe a couple of months. And his dad came to his award ceremony. Now, he see me all the time. See his mama all the time. See his grandmama all the time. Sees his mom's new friend all the time. Hey, man. He saw his daddy in the back of the thing when that program was over. I ain't seen that boy run that fast since I told him he was getting his first spanking. Sprinted over to his dad. Jumped in his arms. Hugged him, grinning, smiling. And, you know, just happy that his dad had showed up. And afterwards, I was telling his dad, hey, man, that's a great scene. I'm going to send you the pictures. Remember that smile. Remember that feeling he had for you. Make sure, you know, your job is your job, but make sure you stay connected, man, because it's important. And now he got him this week. Well, he had him a couple days this week. So he's doing good. But that was just an example of how much that relationship means. And that if you can salvage it, just give it a shot. Because people can change over time.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't always change, but they can change. And so, you know, I guess I get off my preaching, my soapbox now.
Nah. It's Father's. It's going to be Father's Day. That's some father stuff. I know when we played the Carter Cowboy. I can't think of the stadium, but we played the Carter Cowboy. I was having a great first half. I got hit in the hip right before halftime, caused a hip pointer. As they are taking me off, I'm limping off. I see a guy leaning up against the fence. He goes, "Hey man, you all right?" I look over, it's my dad. I think I haven't seen him in 2 years. Somebody must have told him I was good. Do you all right? I said, "Man, I remember just looking up and they go, "Who is that?" I said, "I just looked at him. I go, "Where the hell you been?"
And then I see you saying that too.
I said, "Take me to the locker room." And then I think the next time I saw him was maybe 2 or 3 weeks later when we played LD Bell. And I was back playing and doing my thing. And it was just like, I don't know. I guess I was happy he was there. But it's like I hadn't seen him. And to your point is this. You don't want that boy to get used to not seeing his dad and not doing that. You understand what I'm saying? There's a point where you miss your dad and you running off stage to jump in his arms. And then there's a point to where my dad came to the game and I was doing without him, so I didn't think about him, and it just shocked me that he's standing there going, "You all right?" I want to say,
"Yeah."
I said what I said. Where the hell you been? You know, it was like, it wasn't really like I hated him or nothing, but it was like, I've been working my ass off to get right here to do this, and I hadn't seen you. So, you know. It's one of them things where if you're not in his life, stay in his life where he can miss you and not move on without you and be shocked that you came back. That's what I'm saying. It's kind of like that.
I feel. All right. We always appreciate Smokey John's Barbecue sponsoring the show. We can't do it without them. We'd also like to tell you, make sure you follow the show on Instagram. On YouTube. Instagram, too, at The Real Jacques Talk. YouTube, we're about to drop episode 2 of The Real Jacques Talk, one-on-one, with Kevin Smith, Pup. Dallas Cowboys. Pup! Had a great conversation with Pup. We're dropping that soon on Jacques Talk, one-on-one. You can also follow me on X Twitter. At JJT Journalist. If you think you follow me, you don't. My account's been hijacked, held for ransom, and I refuse to pay that shit. Simple as that.
That's one hell of a lineup you got on 101. Them two cats so far. That's pretty good. I'm probably gonna watch it because you're doing it, but I'm really interested from a fan point because Pup was on his way to being one of the best corners in the NFL to the Achilles. Literally. Yep. I watched that dude throw Jerry Rice to the ground. Like, you ain't shit.
Dude.
Remember that? He clowned Jerry Rice.
That's how he felt.
Yeah. Yeah, Jerry Rice. When they went up and beat... I'm sorry. We about to sign out. All right. I'm just trying to say, when they went up there and beat the 49ers, that was one of the guys that had me going crazy because Pup was that dude.
Did not give a damn.
Nope.
About Jerry Rice.
Was that West Orange Stark? Was it West Orange Stark?
Yep. I think. West Orange Stark.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Yep.
And then remember, check me out on Clapper. Download the app. It's got a TikTok format, but I really get down on Clapper with some videos and some HSOs a lot more than any other social media platform. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor's the handle, easy to find. For Big Joe and the Big Rig and Content Dave, until we chat again, you guys be blessed.